Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. A debate now raging about what President Obama is doing on the torture and legal security fronts. New policies forming and fire coming from all sides. No doubt he came to Washington with lofty intentions. Here's President Obama at his inauguration just 91 days ago.
As for our common defense, we reject as false the choice between our safety and our ideals.
Obama has now said we shouldn't waste time and energy blaming Bush officials for torture policies. That has liberals stirred up. Here's MSNBC's Keith Olbermann.
Mr. President, you're wrong. What you describe would be not spent energy, but catharsis. Not blame laid, but responsibility ascribed.
But it's not just from the left. Conservative outrage, too, over Obama's release of torture-related memos. Here's Bush CIA Director Michael Hayden.
You're going to have this agency on the front line of defending you in this current war, playing back from the line.
Back from the line, but where exactly is the line in all of this? This hour, On Point, debating President Obama's legal moves on torture and beyond. You can join the conversation. Were you happy to see the torture memos released publicly? Is this a step forward for America's ideals, or is this a dangerous precedent? We'll hear in a moment from two big legal minds, but to get us started, joining me first from Washington is Ari Shapiro, justice correspondent for National Public Radio. Ari, how nice to have you with us. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Jane. Good to be here.
Well, thank you. Let's start with the heated reaction since President Obama released the so-called torture memos last week and decided not to prosecute the CIA agents involved. What's been the response from the left and from the right, Ari?
Well, on the left, you had Amnesty International calling the decision not to prosecute CIA interrogators a get-out-of-torture-free card. And you had the UN Special Rapporteur for Torture saying that by deciding not to investigate CIA agents who use these interrogation tactics, the U.S. violates its obligations under the UN Convention Against Torture. That was the reaction from the left. On the right, as you heard, former CIA Director Michael Hayden, other former CIA officials, and other Bush administration officials said this is going to make America weaker. It'll make America less safe. It will make foreign allies less likely to cooperate with us on these kinds of things, and it'll make CIA agents more timid. They also said it'll tell al-Qaeda agents what they need to train to resist, which will make it harder to break any future terrorism suspects that we get in custody.
So does the Obama administration see it as a good sign that neither side is entirely happy with this decision?
Well, they were really trying to thread the needle on this. In the days and weeks leading up to the release of these memos, there was a lot of pressure from the Justice Department to get transparency and from the CIA to not release or to release heavily redacted versions of these memos. Because there were so few redactions in the memos that were released, it's pretty clear that the folks at the Justice Department won that argument, but I think the Obama administration, President Obama, felt like he needed to assuage the fears of the CIA, which I think is one reason you had these assurances that people who relied in good faith on the Justice Department's legal guidance would not be prosecuted for it.
Put into context, Ari, the news in the New York Times today that waterboarding was used 266 times on two key suspects in 2003. How will that affect this debate?
Well, we're talking about Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and Abu Zubaydah, who were two of the highest value, they say, terrorism detainees in American custody. And I think people who oppose torture have been saying this lends weight to their argument that torture is not a magic wand that suddenly gives you the answers you want from a terrorism suspect. They're saying if you had to waterboard one individual detainee more than 150 times to get some kind of information out of him, is that really more effective, more useful, more efficient than interrogation tactics that don't involve abuse? All along, anti-torture advocates have been saying it's not just that torture is immoral and wrong, it's also that it doesn't work as effectively as the supporters of these interrogation tactics say they do. They are now using this very high number of 188 for one individual, more than 250 for these two detainees, saying this many waterboarding sessions shows that it wasn't just something you did once for 30 seconds and then got the answer to the ticking time bomb question.
What seemed to be President Obama's calculation in the overall handling of the Bush-era policies in this particular way, Ari?
It's this real balancing act on secrecy generally. I mean, the question of the torture memos is just the latest issue we've seen where the Obama administration has had to take something that the Bush administration treated as top secret and decide whether to hold the same position or change their mind. There were two very high-profile national security court cases, one about rendition, which is sending people to a foreign country for torture, and one about domestic surveillance of Americans without a warrant. In both of those cases, the Bush administration argued the state secrets doctrine kept the case from being tried in court. So the Bush administration went to court and told a judge, you can't try this case because if you do it, it'll compromise state secrets. Well, the Obama administration inherited both of those cases, and in both instances, they held to the Bush line. They said, if you try this case at all, it'll compromise state secrets. You need to throw this out. And that angered a lot of transparency advocates, people who said President Obama came to office promising transparency, and they said he hasn't followed through on that promise. Well, here with the torture memos, we saw an example of him going the opposite way, where instead of holding to the Bush administration line on secrecy, instead of even holding to the argument that his own CIA director, Leon Panetta, made, that you either have to release these with heavy redactions or not release them at all, instead of doing that, he released these memos almost completely unredacted.
Also, President Obama said that everything in the torture memos was already in public circulation. Was he right about that?
Well, a lot of it was. There were some things that certainly I had never seen before. For example, Abu Zubaydah, who was terrorism suspect who was detained, and the first memo from 2002 was written specifically about the interrogation tactics that could be used against Abu Zubaydah. That memo said he had an intense fear of bugs, and so the CIA asked for permission to put Zubaydah in a tiny box with some sort of caterpillar to exploit his fear of insects. That was something we hadn't heard about before. There were also really minute details about the way these interrogation tactics were used that get so meticulous. For example, slapping a detainee's abdomen was one of the tactics. And this memo says, well, you have to make contact between the navel and the sternum. Your fingers must be fully extended. There can't be a gap between your fingers. For almost every one of the interrogation tactics, there was that kind of detail. So when someone was being doused with water, these memos say, if the water is 41 degrees, you can only douse them for this period of time. If the water is 50 degrees, this many minutes is the maximum. And so there's a real intricacy to these memos that I don't think we had seen before.
Was the decision to protect the CIA and the agents involved and those who gave the orders, was that an easy decision for President Obama, or was there some drama behind the scenes that you might know about?
Well, there was a lot of lobbying from the CIA directors, both current and former. And part of the backstory you have to understand here is that you compare CIA Director Leon Panetta to Attorney General Eric Holder at the head of the CIA and the Justice Department, respectively. Well, Eric Holder had spent practically his entire professional life in the Justice Department. And so he entered his job with a lot of institutional credibility, where the people who work under him sort of implicitly trust him to understand the way the Justice Department works because he spent so many years there. Contrast that with Leon Panetta, the head of the CIA, who came into office with a lot of skepticism that he doesn't have the intelligence community experience and doesn't necessarily have that same implicit trust that somebody like Eric Holder had. So Panetta really felt a lot of pressure to stick up for the CIA agents working under him and prove that he was representing the agency that he is in charge of. I think that may have informed his heavy lobbying to release these in a heavily redacted way or not at all.
Right. And with those four former CIA directors saying it would be harder for intelligence agents to battle terrorists in the future, certainly a lot of pressure in many respects.
Right. I think CIA Director Leon Panetta, in a very real way, is trying to prove himself. He's kind of in an unofficial probationary period at the CIA with the other people there at the agency. And this was one of the first big public instances on which he felt he had to prove himself. And I think he can say that these assurances that CIA interrogators won't be prosecuted is a partial win for him, even though, you know, other CIA officials are coming out and saying this is a bad day for the agency, will make people more timid, and it, in the end, they say makes America less safe.
Ari Shapiro, hold on just a moment. I'd like to bring another voice into the conversation at this point. From Charlottesville, Virginia, Robert Turner, professor at the University of Virginia School of Law. He's also the associate director of UVA's Center for National Security Law. He's served in various roles in Republican administrations. Bob Turner, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
How do you see President Obama's legal moves in the so-called war on terror realm, particularly news over the weekend, as we've been mentioning, that there aren't likely to be prosecutions of anyone in the Bush administration as it relates to the terror memos?
Well, if you look at the facts, if we were to prosecute CIA interrogators who had been told that the Attorney General of the United States had said this was lawful, and we come by and say, well, we've reconsidered that, it's a new administration, we're going to put you guys in jail, I can't imagine any soldier or any CIA interrogator in future years doing very much. I think you would have a chilling effect, and the goal would be to ratchet down what people did, and I think more Americans would die as a result. So I think that was the only really possible decision, even though, as you may know, I was a very strong critic of waterboarding and other abusive techniques several years ago. So I'm unhappy with what happened, but you don't blame the junior people who carried out orders being told it was legal. And even at the top, I would bet you money that neither Bush nor Rumsfeld had ever heard of Common Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions. They're not lawyers. They were told by their lawyers this was lawful. And my guess is most of the lawyers involved in this were not national security lawyers, were not people who really were experts in this area. And the issue of whether Common Article 3 applied is one where there were honest differences. You may remember Common Article 3 provides that in a conflict of a non-international character, you have to give certain protections. And there were a whole bunch of countries involved. I think they thought this was international, but it was not. They were wrong.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about Bush-era terrorism policies in the Obama era and how much the current president is looking like the former. We've got a terrific panel this hour. National Public Radio Justice Correspondent Ari Shapiro joins us from Washington. From Virginia, Robert Turner, law professor at the University of Virginia, is with us. And joining us from Washington is Jonathan Turley, professor at the George Washington University Law School. He's been a leading voice calling for President Obama's administration to investigate Bush-era policies. You can see his very active legal blog at jonathanturley.com. Jonathan, good to have you with us.
Thank you. Hi, Jane.
Right off the top here, let's hear what President Obama's Chief of Staff, Rahm Emanuel, said over the weekend on ABC's This Week about Bush-era policies. Emanuel was asked about the decision to protect CIA agents who interrogate suspects.
He believes that people in good faith were operating with the guidance they were provided. They shouldn't be
prosecuted. But what about those who devised the policy?
Yeah, but those who devised the policy, he believes that they were should not be prosecuted either. And it's not the place that we go, as he said in that letter, and I would really recommend people look at the full statement, not the letter, the statement. In that second paragraph, this is not a time for retribution. It's time for reflection. It is not a time to use our energy and our time in looking back and in a sense of anger and retribution.
Jonathan Turley, I'll turn to you first here. Do you believe that President Obama should protect the CIA agents involved in these torture allegations?
Well, no one seriously thought that we were going to prosecute the people that carried out these orders, even though I believe they can be legitimately charged with the war crime of torture. This defense that you were following orders was, of course, rejected by the United States at Nuremberg. But more importantly, even the domestic defense that you were following legal instructions, which is a valid defense, is based on a good faith belief. And at the time all this was going on, there was a lot of people, including myself, who had heard about these techniques and had put everyone on notice that they were war crimes. But the biggest problem is not that he's saying he won't prosecute them. What's curious is that he's promising that there won't be an investigation. It makes it very difficult to prosecute higher-ups when you tell the people involved that they have nothing to fear from prosecution. One of the great tools in these types of cases is the threat of prosecution. But the other thing is that we're making a sweeping change in policy here. It is, once again, one thing to ultimately decide that it's not equitable to charge these individuals when you're charging higher-ups. We haven't gotten there yet. But it's another thing entirely to say, as a blanket rule, if you tortured people in violation of international law, and various Bush officials, the Red Cross, and many others have said this was clear torture, that you won't be hearing from the United States.
Robert Turner, respond to what Jonathan Turley's just said.
I'm sorry, I'm here. I have mixed feelings on this one. In general, I think that prosecuting people who commit war crimes is a good idea. Indeed, I co-authored an op-ed back in 1990, right after Saddam had invaded Kuwait, calling for a war crimes trial for Saddam. I think that was the first call. But in this case, we have to look at sort of fundamental fairness as well. I don't think the people who made these decisions were evil people. I think it was very clear, just about everybody agreed, everybody who knew anything about the Geneva Conventions agreed they did not apply to Al-Qaeda. The issue there was whether one provision, Common Article 3, did apply. And the issue there was, is this a conflict of a non-international character? And with something like 90 countries involved in the fight against Al-Qaeda, I think it was not an unreasonable decision to say, no, that doesn't apply. This is an international conflict. But when you've got the top lawyers in the country saying this is lawful, the idea that you then go after low-level people, just to give you one example, imagine if you're not allowed to interrogate someone harshly, certainly you're not allowed to kill someone. So every private who's told to go out there and if you see someone with a gun who appears to be an enemy, shoot him, are we now going to say we're going to try you for murder unless you can show that you had proof beyond reasonable doubt this guy was not really a guy walking across the battlefield going to the Rod and Gun Club for a turkey shoot? I think it's very important that we not chill either our military or our intelligence people, even though I think this was a horrible decision. As I say, I mentioned before, I've been very critical of the decision to waterboard.
Let's listen to President Bush's CIA director, Michael Hayden, on Fox News on Sunday. He was asked by host Chris Wallace about the release of these so-called torture memos.
The really dangerous effect of this, Chris, is that you will have agency officers stepping back from the kinds of things that the nation expects them to do. I mean, if you were to go to an agency officer today and say, go do this, and why am I authorized to do this? And I said, well, it's authorized by the president. The attorney general says it's lawful, and it's been briefed to Congress. That agency officer is going to say, yeah, I know, but I see what's going on here now. Have you run up by the ACLU? What's the New York Times editorial board think? Have you discussed this with any potential presidential candidates?
Jonathan Turley, what do you say of that, the concern that officers might be stepping back? They're going to be handcuffed.
Well, I think it's just flagrantly ridiculous. Hayden's my neighbor, talking about tension on the block. But I think that General Hayden should be facing criminal charges for what he did during his service. I think the problem with the Obama administration is that they're allowing people like Hayden and Cheney to go out there and make these claims when they should be subject to indictment. I mean, the thing we're talking about are crimes here of the highest magnitude. I disagree with Professor Turner that if you shoot someone on their way to the Rod and Gun Club, yeah, I want you charged with murder. But that's not really what we're talking about here. That is, what we're talking about here are war crimes that these memos that were written by people like Judge Bybee basically argued that this wasn't torture, not that it fell outside the treaties. They're saying that it didn't, in one part they say waterboarding doesn't cause pain, so it can't possibly be torture. What is torture? Even people like Armitage recently said that he should have resigned because of the torture. And what Hayden is saying is absolutely unbelievable. Most of what is in these memos, in terms of what the techniques were, had already been released. What they fought from being released was the legal arguments that are obviously fallacious. They're obviously ridiculous. Even people like Charles Freed, who has said that these arguments are ridiculous.
Robert Turner, come in here. Robert Hayden also said that releasing these so-called torture memos helps terrorists. What do you make of that?
Well, I don't know, but I'm inclined when you've got four former directors of Central Intelligence from the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, and other administrations saying these shouldn't have been released in time of war, I would give them the benefit of the doubt. I think we're involved in a war. We've got people out there who want to kill as many Americans as they can. These techniques were used by people trying to get information, and apparently they did that. General Hayden and others have said they've gotten more information from these coercive interrogations than from every other intelligence source combined. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. I've been out of government for 20-some-odd years, but I'm inclined to think they're telling the truth
on
this.
Well, that leads me to a question for Ari Shapiro again, Justice Correspondent for National Public Radio. Ari, what sort of precedent is President Obama setting, especially with the release of these torture memos? Will the burden shift to the president to release other documents? Will he be forced to explain why the torture memos can be released but others cannot?
The burden already has shifted. The ACLU said that there are transcriptions of hearings at Guantanamo Bay, where some of these former CIA detainees arrived at Guantanamo and described the way they were treated in CIA prisons. Those parts were left out of the published transcripts of the proceedings because it was classified. Well, now that these memos describing the way people can be treated have been declassified, the ACLU is going to push for those transcripts describing CIA detainees' accounts of the way they were treated for those to be declassified as well. So there's kind of a set of dominoes here that the ACLU and other advocates hope will fall. These memos only came out because the ACLU first filed a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit about 5 years ago, demanding them, and a judge was going to order that they be released or that the Obama administration explain why it was not going to release them. So this deadline really came from the outside rather than internally.
I have calls lined up around the block here. I've got to get to them first here. Leonard is in Newton, Massachusetts. Hi, Leonard. Welcome to On Point. Thanks for waiting.
Yes, thank you for taking the call. I think a terrible precedent would be set by not pursuing action against the people responsible for putting out these OKs for the torture. And I would want to compare it to the situation with the impeachment of President Clinton under moral grounds. And how could the same people on the right who pursued that with such ferocity now sit back and say that we're not going to pursue issues of torture? I mean, the precedent is unbelievable.
Leonard, thank you. Robert Turner, a terrible precedent being set, the caller says, on moral grounds.
I don't agree. And I think the best parallel here may be we tried this once. After Vietnam, we had the Church and Pike hearings on alleged intelligence abuses. And they spent a year publicly airing every bit of intelligence they could get. They said the CIA was a rogue elephant, although Frank Church in the end finally said that really wasn't true. They did a whole volume of hundreds of pages on CIA assassinations and reported in the end they could not find a single case where the CIA had ever assassinated anyone. They hadn't made a decision to assassinate Patrice Lumumba, and they had tried to assassinate Castro, but they could not find a single case. There's an article in a recent issue of the Indiana Law Journal that goes back and looks at the family jewels documents. The CIA recently declassified a whole bunch of information, and the writer found one operation that he felt was clearly in violation of U.S. law. That was the one of LSD testing on unwitting Americans, and that was stopped in 1962 in the Kennedy administration. But the end result of that was to create such a chilling effect to tell the intelligence community, don't push just sit back and get your pension. It had a tremendous effect on demoralizing the CIA. It was followed by the unconstitutional Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which contributed directly to the 9/11 attacks. General Hayden himself has said that had the TSP been in effect in 2001, they would have identified at least some of the al-Qaeda terrorists.
Here's another call from Michael. He's in Middlebury, Connecticut, with a different perspective. Michael, go ahead.
Yes, hello, Jane. I appreciate the conversation, but the more I listen, the angrier I'm getting here.
Tell us why. Go ahead.
Why are we calling these memos torture memos instead of interrogation memos.
Oh, well, there's actually a very straightforward answer to that question.
Go ahead,
the memos
are
all about what the definition of torture is. And so the memos are all about picking apart, is this or is this not torture? So in describing them as torture memos, in the same way we would describe memos about spying as surveillance memos, the subject of the memos is torture.
And so, Michael, what do you think of the memos generally?
I don't believe that waterboarding is torture. These are bad people. They got what they deserved. You know, I don't know why we're talking about trying to indict, people who are trying to protect us from doing just that.
Michael, thanks. Jonathan Turley, the caller says this is what we should be doing. These people are getting what they deserve.
Well, of course, that's the argument that's been used by every tyrant in history. That's the argument that is used in countries that don't believe in human rights and international law, and that is hang them on meat hooks. They're bad people, and these people are just trying to help us. Professor Turner came to almost closely that argument when he says, look, these are not bad people or evil people. Of course they're evil people. They committed torture. They committed war crimes. That makes them war criminals. And in terms of what we're talking about here, waterboarding has been defined as torture for decades, including by U.S. courts. President Obama and Attorney General Holder have also said that waterboarding is torture. Bush officials have said that they engaged in torture. The International Red Cross, which is a leading organization on this question, said that it's torture. A United Nations official just a few days ago said it's not only torture, but the Obama administration may be in violation of its international obligations. Mm-hmm. So there's no question. No question as to what it is. The question is who we are. When President Obama uses terms like retribution, he is making a very important policy change. It's not retribution to enforce U.S. laws, and it's not retribution to pursue war criminals. Every nation that has tried to get out of the inconvenience of pursuing its own war criminals, like Serbia, have argued that they don't want to look backwards. Just last week, when Obama was making that statement, pro-Taliban Pakistani legislators adopted Obama's argument and said they're not going to pursue the Taliban for war crimes because it would just be looking backwards.
John, let me squeeze one more caller in before our break here. John is calling from New York. New York, welcome, John, to the program. Thanks for waiting.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. Go ahead.
I think you're splitting hairs, and I don't understand it.
Okay.
It is, what is the United States? Are we a landmass? Or are we, as Lincoln said, a proposition? And we either, as a country, believe in our values and we have a legal system that enforces that, or we do not. We're either defending our material goods or we're defending our ideals.
John, thank you. Ari Shapiro, I'll let you have the last word before the break here.
Well, at the end of the day, despite what Rahm Emanuel, President Obama's chief of staff, said on the Sunday morning talk shows, the decision of whether to pursue this through further investigations or prosecutions is not up to the president. The president has a bully pulpit, but the decision of whether to prosecute is up to the attorney general, and the decision of whether to have the kind of bipartisan truth commission that's been proposed in the House and Senate is up to Congress. So President Obama has made himself pretty clear. Attorney General Holder has said he does not intend to prosecute interrogators who were following the Justice Department's legal guidance. But if Attorney General Holder wanted to appoint a prosecutor to look into the people who gave that legal guidance or to people who may have conducted harsh interrogations before the Justice Department gave the CIA that legal guidance, or interrogators who went beyond the legal guidance that the Justice Department gave, that's a decision that the Attorney General can make regardless of what the president thinks.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about Bush-era terrorism policies in the Obama era and how much the current president is looking like the former. We've got a terrific panel this hour. National Public Radio justice correspondent Ari Shapiro joins us from Washington. Jonathan Turley, law professor at George Washington University, also joins us from the Capitol. And from Virginia, Robert Turner, law professor at the University of Virginia. Here's some more sound from this weekend on ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos. House Minority Leader John Boehner weighed in on the Obama administration's release of the so-called torture memos. Here he refers to reports that Obama's CIA director Leon Panetta had reservations about releasing those memos.
I think the release of these memos is dangerous, and I agree with what Leon Panetta had to say when he made it clear that he thought that this would hamper our ability to get information from terrorists and get other countries to work with us.
Ari Shapiro, we've talked a little bit about Leon Panetta and the other CIA directors. Take us beyond these torture memos. How do you see President Obama's positions on things like wiretapping and detention of prisoners? Where do you see those particular positions moving?
They are moving. I mean, they are in flux. He has panels of people in his government working to figure out what the best policy is on things like detention, where the people at Guantanamo should go, how people can legally be interrogated. And while those panels are trying to develop some kind of fixed, coherent policy, there are all of these deadlines coming at them left and right where they have to take a position in this court case or that Freedom of Information Act lawsuit. And so far, I think privacy advocates will tell you it has been a mixed bag. On the issue of surveillance, President Obama has probably hewed closer to President Bush than some civil liberties activists would have liked. On the issue of detention, he has said that he's going to close Guantanamo. At the same time, he has argued for the right to detain people indefinitely at Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan. So it's a mixed bag. I mean, just before these torture memos were released, I spoke with Jamil Jaffer, who's head of the ACLU's National Security Project, and he said he thinks the jury is still out on whether Obama has kept his promises on secrecy or not. He said if President Obama had decided not to release these torture memos, he would have been hugely disillusioned and disappointed. Now that he has released the torture memos, you know, I think we're still going to have to just take each of these policies as they come and wait for some overarching statement, which the Obama administration does plan to release one of these days.
Mm. Well, let's drill down on a couple of those points. Jonathan Turley, Robert Turner, how do you see Obama's position on wiretapping and detention of prisoners? Jonathan Turley, are you disappointed in what he's done so far?
Extremely disappointed on electronic surveillance. The position of the Obama administration in some ways went beyond the Bush administration in a recent filing where they're claiming immunity from prosecution, immunity from civil lawsuit, not just for telecom companies, which Obama voted in favor of as a senator, but also for the agencies themselves. And he's claimed sovereign immunity and really adopted the most extreme possible position. And I think part of the problem is that Obama has always been more interested in programs than principles. He's frankly not that motivated by principles involving war crimes or privacy, and he never has been. I mean, there's been this mystique around Obama, but when he was a senator, he voted for this telecom immunity provision, which most of us saw zero public interest. He moved to extinguish dozens of public interest lawsuits that were trying to protect privacy, and in a huge win for the telecom lobby. And I'm afraid we're seeing across the boards that he's kept many of these very extreme voices in his administration, and they're pursuing the same policies on electronic surveillance.
Robert Turner, how do you see it?
Well, one of our biggest problems is an ignorance of national security law. Most of the lawyers involved in this debate have not followed these issues for years. If you go back to 1979, in Smith versus Maryland, the Supreme Court held that a PIN register could be used to capture the numbers being dialed out of a home. A PIN register was installed at the phone company to just find out if a certain person was making harassing calls to another person, and they said there is no Fourth Amendment protection for what number you're dialing or your own phone number. On the other area, every court to decide the issue has held that the president has independent constitutional authority to conduct warrantless foreign intelligence wiretaps. When the Supreme Court, in the Katz case in 67, first held that wiretaps were a seizure under the Fourth Amendment in footnote 23, it said this does not limit the president's ability to collect foreign intelligence or national security information. In 68, when Congress passed the Omnibus Crime Control and Safe Streets Act, it said specifically nothing in this chapter shall limit the constitutional power of the president to take such measures as he deems necessary to obtain foreign intelligence information. I worked in the Senate when FISA was passed. I thought it was unconstitutional. Then we created an appellate court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court of Review. In 2002, it issued an opinion noting that all of the courts that had decided the issue had held the president has his power, and he went on to say, we take for granted the president does have that authority, and assuming that is so, FISA could not encroach on the president's constitutional power. The point being, the president has to obey the law, see the law faithfully executed, but which law?
That's the issue. The Detroit court ruled that the warrantless surveillance program was unconstitutional, went to the Court of Appeals, they decided
it was overturned.
But you did have a district court judge, the only judge who looked and rendered a decision, saying that this was unconstitutional.
But yeah, that's true. An ACLU, in fact, she was on the ACLU Board of Directors, and the case was overturned within a year.
But what you said, that no court had ever ruled against it is untrue.
You're correct. You're right. I should have quoted that to the 2002 opinion. You're exactly right. That case is out there. But the Supreme Court has had seven opportunities to declare the Fourth Amendment requires the president to get a warrant for foreign intelligence wiretaps. I've already mentioned Katz. In the Keith case in 1972, Justice Powell, who had chaired an ABA committee on this issue that recommended you need a warrant when you're wiretapping a purely domestic national security threat, but not for foreign intelligence threats. There are two separate places in the Keith case where Justice Powell emphasizes we are not talking about foreign powers or their agents in this country.
There have been five other cases.
Go ahead, Jade.
Well, let me just bring another caller in here because the intricacies of this are get a little muddied, but I want to hear from some of our listeners who have other thoughts. Michael is first up in Waltham, Massachusetts. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hello, Jade.
Hi.
If I can wave the bloody flag.
Please.
Right now. I was a two-time voluntary tour veteran of Vietnam, and because no one knows my last name at this point, I'll also mention that I was decorated for bravery. Now, when I first heard of the tortures, I was really disgusted because I knew immediately that this was going to make every other real fighting man, I don't mean judge, I don't mean lawyer, I don't mean legislator, every real fighting man of ours out there subject to these same things, that we would have decried and jumped up and down with justice before. And now we can't do it. We would look like fools.
So you're saying you're worried about accountability, Michael. Is that right?
Yes. And the trouble with a lot of your a lot of the arguments of one of your guests is that, okay, maybe we shouldn't go after the guy that gave 266 instances of water torture to two men and 250 to one man. Maybe we shouldn't go after those good patriotic souls, but we should certainly go after the people that caused them to do that.
Michael,
that made them think they were legal.
Thank you for your call, and thanks for your service to our country. Let's go to another call. Kevin is on the line from Stuart, Florida. Hi, Kevin. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, thank you. I thought this was all briefed to the Senate Intelligence Committee back in 2002. I think the Washington Post leaked that a while ago, and it's like, why aren't we asking the senators their opinions and hold them accountable, too? It's like everybody thinks you had a rogue president, and he looks like he used lawyers, at least inquired about the legality of this. And the second question, I don't think they've determined yet what is the appropriate means of interrogation to get, you know, questioning. So it's all up in the air still. We're 8 years into the war, but why aren't we broadening the scope of the investigation to include these senators?
Kevin, thank you. Ari Shapiro, laying blame on Bush and lawyers, but the Senate knew what was going on, is what the caller is saying.
There was a group of eight members of Congress. It's called the Group of Eight. It's the senior members of the House and Senate Intelligence Committee, and they were regularly briefed on this program. They were not allowed to take notes. They were not allowed to have aides with them. These folks also are not lawyers. They did know about what was happening, and they should be asked what their opinion was at the time and what their opinion is now and whether that has changed. In terms of asking for legal guidance, I think there's something interesting. I read this morning on a very highly regarded legal blog called Balkanization, an analysis of kind of how this legal advice came about. And as this law professor, Brian Tamanaha, breaks it down, he says, essentially, the CIA told the Justice Department, we would like permission to do A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Are these things legal? Our experience shows they do not cause severe pain and suffering, and therefore we believe they're not torture. And the Justice Department replied, we don't have studies of whether this causes severe pain and suffering, but based on your assertion that it doesn't, we conclude that A, B, C, D, E, F, G are not torture. And so, at least in the eyes of some legal analysts, it's something of a circular legal argument in these memos.
Here's another call now from Des Moines, Iowa. Tim is on the line. Hi, Tim. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Jane.
Hi.
I really don't see any upside to the release of the memos now. I keep waiting for one specific example of actionable intelligence obtained by these harsh methods. I remember when Al Libby gave bad information about Muhammad Atta being in Prague, Czechoslovakia, and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed admitted to everything, you know, from the beginning of time he admitted to under these methods. But is there one example of actionable intelligence obtained by these methods?
Ari Shapiro?
I'm actually trying to flip to the relevant page in one of these memos from 2005, which goes into some detail about this. And, well, I can't find the exact page at my fingertips. Oh, here we go. It says, it is difficult to quantify with confidence and precision the effectiveness of the program. As the Inspector General report notes, it's difficult to determine conclusively whether interrogations have provided information critical to interdicting specific imminent attacks. And because the CIA has used enhanced techniques sparingly, there is limited data on which to assess their individual effectiveness. Then it goes on to describe some tips that were gained that perhaps led to valuable information. And certainly former CIA officials have said that there was valuable information gathered from these interrogations. One of the questions one has to ask is, how deeply buried, if at all, was that valuable information in bogus information? Were people saying what they thought their interrogators wanted to hear? And were agents running off on wild goose chases? I don't have the answer to those questions, but I think that's one of the things that people are going to be pursuing now that we know what was done. People want to know what information was gleaned as a result of it.
Jonathan Turley?
I want to make two points. First of all, I think it's a mistake to get pulled into this debate over how effective these techniques were. We're not allowed to use the techniques. They're war crimes. And the more, this is what the Bush administration got the country to think about in sort of a moral relativistic way. Yeah, sure, we waterboarded these people, but look at all the good stuff we got. That's not the point of war crimes. There's lots of things you can do. You could beat a car theft suspect into confessing and revealing where the stolen cars are, but we don't allow it because it's a crime. But putting aside that, I think, very precarious moral issue, just about 2 weeks before these memos were released, in terms of a report dealing with Zubaydah, who was also tortured, government officials admitted that they got absolute junk from him. And that is consistent with what we know about torture. When you torture someone, they'll say anything to get the pain to stop. And so even if you're okay morally with torturing people, which I find absolutely astonishing that we would even engage in this discussion, it actually doesn't produce much. So you not only lose your soul, you don't gain much from it.
Here's another call from Aiken, South Carolina. Brenda is on the line. Hi, Brenda. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Thank you.
You bet.
I just want to make the point that this is not about retribution, and it's not about, certainly not about catharsis, as Keith Olbermann said. It's about the rules that all human beings are supposed to play by, and it's about accountability to laws, laws of morality and of international law and justice. And the people who defend these actions and want no prosecutions because they're calling it interrogation, not torture, would speak very differently if we were talking about Americans who had been subjected to these acts by Iraqis, by Afghanis, and by members of Al-Qaeda. These people want to always believe that Americans are special, that we are better than other people, and therefore we are exempt from the rules of morality and the rules of international law.
Brenda, thank you. Robert Turner, would you quickly respond?
Yeah, I'd like to pick up on that one. I'm certainly not defending waterboarding. I've been on record criticizing it for several years. But what I am saying, the people who made these decisions were not evil people. They were trying to find the lesser evil between abusing two terrorists versus perhaps having 10 or 20,000 Americans killed by the next terrorist attack. And I think there's a parallel here we haven't looked at. In 1942, FDR issued a military order ordering the apprehension and detention in concentration camps of 120,000 American citizens. Many of them had no connection with Japan, had never been there. They were born in America. Earl Warren, one of our most liberal chief justices, went before the Congress and supported that as Attorney General for California. Hugo Black, probably the greatest civil libertarian on the Supreme Court in the 20th century, wrote the majority opinion upholding it. Mm. Why did that happen? Not because these were evil people, but because they were terrified in trying to protect Americans. They made a mistake. We didn't investigate them.
Professor Turner, I had to jump in because we're running out of time. But Ari Shapiro, let me quickly wrap up with you here. You talked about the Truth Commission. President Obama has repeatedly suggested he opposes congressional proposals for this Truth Commission. Do you think we're going to see it?
I think there is more of a push for it now than there was a week ago before we had these memos. And that's not the only investigation that's going on. You may remember there was a destruction of some videotaped interrogations. The videotapes were destroyed. There's an ongoing investigation into the destruction of those tapes. And some of them were apparently from before the CIA got legal guidance on how it was allowed to treat Abu Zubaydah. So there's that. And then there's also a professional ethics investigation into the lawyers who wrote these memos and whether they violated legal ethical guidelines.
Well, a fiery and informative discussion. Many thanks to my panel members today, Ari Shapiro, NPR's justice correspondent. Ari, thank you very much.
Great to be with you.
And Robert Turner, law professor at the University of Virginia. Bob, thank you.
My pleasure.
And Jonathan Turley, law professor at George Washington University, jonathanturley.org. Thanks so much for your time, John.
Thank you, Jane.
You can continue the conversation, listeners, and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point.